good news, everyone!
Time for fun!
It's time for another episode of Blessing of Frost, a World of Warcraft podcast hosted by Magic and Kern.
And hello there, fans, and welcome to episode 4 of Blessing of Frost. How are you doing tonight, Kern?
I'm doing good, Madge. How about yourself?
Not too shabby. I'm ready to have a good time. Now that Cataclysm is hitting and we're all ready to discuss it, now, no more thinking about what is going to happen. It is here. Tonight, we'll be talking about our weeks in leveling in dungeons, some fail we've seen from other people, and a general chat of the first impressions of all this craziness. I'm even more excited because we have another special guest this week.
That's right. Our guest today is Dayden, the tank officer of Apotheosis, who plays a protection pally. How you doing tonight, Dayden?
Good, guys. How you guys doing?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Excellent. Excited to discuss a lot of the new changes and general stuff going on. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm so excited. I can't keep my skin on.
Wonderful.
Excellent. And with that, let's move into our Lore Master segment. Magic, how about your week? How was that?
I don't know. I always go first. Let's hear about your week first.
My week?
Yeah,
really?
Your week. That's what I want to hear right now. Let's do it.
Alrighty. Well, I had an interesting week. I think everyone did. I got my Hunter Kern up to 85, and Madrana at this point is at 84 and 16%, which
oh
I think is
God.
Hideous, horrible.
That is horrifying.
It really is, because I basically lapped people. Like, I've caught up.
Like, almost me.
Yeah, almost you. But I've got the whole podcast thing tonight, so there's no way I'm going to finish off seven or 84% tonight. Gosh.
Oh, I've said that before, too. And the smaller the percent, the bigger the push to get it done. I don't care what time of night it is.
Okay, you may have a point. Like, you may see me ding 85 on Madrona at, 6 a.m.
Exactly.
We'll so it's been busy. I've been doing a lot of questing, obviously. I've done a bunch of dungeon runs, which is fun. I gotta say that I ran into such a failed druid in Vortex Pinnacle this week.
Yes, that was a not exciting run. That was our first Vortex Pinnacle run, right?
It really was, and it sort of made me a little bit scared for the rest of the sort of higher level instances, which really aren't all that bad. It's just that he was that terrible of a resto druid, and I feel bad because, like, I'm a healer, predominantly anyway.
Usually.
And I don't really want to rag on the healers. I really believe that the healers are going to get a bad rap over the next couple weeks or couple of months because, basically if the group is doing something stupid, then the healer is going to, be to blame even though it's not really the healer's fault. So I try to give a bit of leniency towards the healers when I'm not in a healing role. But this druid was just bad. Oh, God.
Yeah, and he was the one who was trying to instruct us on how to do the dungeon. He got some of the parts right, but the healing part was not quite the one he was on top of.
He definitely
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
This transition into how much the healing game has changed, in this first week of Cataclysm being out, and all those healers who were basically trying their hands at that new healing game and getting used to, their mana running dry and trying to get away from that mindset of keeping everybody topped off on top of people, just standing in bad. People dying because they're standing in bad and expecting their awesome healer to pick up the slack is going to create a lot of problems. And I do feel bad for the healers who are mashing their heals as much as they can to try to save the day. But unfortunately, it just doesn't work out.
Exactly.
And normally I would give some slack to these healers. Like, I really feel for the healers, being one myself. But when you look at the druid who just let, Fog, who's tanking Vortex Pinnacle, he basically let him die. He let Sefton, Magic's brother, die.
Yeah.
He let Magic die. I don't know how I lived on my Hunter. I think I must have hit Deterrence or something and maybe even taken a healing potion. But at the end of the fight, three were dead, including the tank. It's like he didn't even have Hots up or something. And he's just like sort of waiting to see what happens.
I remember a distinct lack of hots through most of that instance as well, which was kind of the scary part, being he was a resto druid.
Oh, it's just, yeah. So I just had to mention that. And while a lot of the time, you know, if you're not playing well, it's not the healer's fault if your group wipes. But, like, seriously, you gotta at least put some effort in there.
Yeah. I heard you got something else exciting from Vortex Pinnacle, right?
I did. Today, actually, this morning, I did a random, I pugged an entire group. Hideous. Horrifying.
Oh, goodness.
And, actually, the tank left after the, after, like, third pull or something like that, because he kept not picking up adds like on the sides. Like, he'd charge the middle one but not pick up the adds on the sides.
Oh, so the heals.
So, like, yeah, they came at me, and then the feral druid would like shift into bear to like taunt off of me and then sort of drag him over to the other guy, but then the tank would actually just not pick it up off of
the bear.
And I'm like, what? So I'm like, excuse me, do you mind maybe making sure you get aggro on all of the mobs, please? Because, you know, I'm drawing them to me. And he's like, I don't have to take this. And he basically, like, threw a fit.
Wow.
He left after that?
He left.
Oh my goodness.
I was really
That's
nice.
So
I,
silly.
I can be really mean, but I was so nice. I'm like, excuse me, I was hoping that maybe you could, you know, get some aggro on these mobs.
If you could do your job, that'd just be great.
And he didn't, and then he left. And so we waited for another tank, and we got another tank, and who actually did do that, which was great. And anyway, so we get to the first boss, not a problem. We get to the second boss, not a problem, even though that tank had never actually done that before. And then it drops. The Reigns of the Drake of the North Winds.
Off the last boss?
Off the second boss.
Off the dragon.
Yeah, off the dragon.
Drake. Nice.
And that drops in normal?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely drops in normal because it dropped today and we all hit need and I got a 99 and I won.
Congratulations.
Wow, that's awesome.
Thank you. I'm pretty pleased with that.
Excellent.
How about your week, Madge?
It's been pretty good. I've been leveling Magic the Mage first, and I guess it's been going a lot more slowly than I would have imagined, just because I haven't really been keeping entirely on top of it. I've had a busy real-life week in addition. My dryer broke recently after I did 2 loads of wet laundry, and so that prompted a need to go back to my home and actually use the dryer there, my parents' dryer.
Old parents doing the laundry trick. I remember doing that.
Yeah, their dryer was actively working, so that was a whole day just gone of leveling. Although 525 tailoring on magic, and so that was definitely not easy because I don't think cloth drops anywhere. It just doesn't exist.
There is no cloth to be found, I'm telling you right now. I've farmed all kinds of things on both of my tunes now. There's no cloth anywhere.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that 9 out of 10 pieces of ember silk that drop in Kata is BOP.
Yeah, I have to agree that that's pretty much seemed what it's like. In addition, I successfully moved Lone E Wolf back.
Yay!
Yeah, and he has 525 inscription, so those 2 grinds are done with. And he can make a lot of really interesting offhands that are pretty cool.
And you can make relics, too, which I think is a really neat change to inscription, especially considering the relics can now be used by any class who could use a relic. They're not class-specific anymore, at least not in this early stage of Cataclysm. So it's really neat that you can make a relic that I might want to equip later on when I'm ready to raid.
Yeah,
well, I think inscriptionists can make the I think it's called a notched jawbone. It's such a nice relic for, you know, pre-heroic gear.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I think I put a couple things like that into the guild bank to be sold for profit.
Oh my gosh, I think Fog probably got like 4K for that or something.
Wow. I mean, those things are really ridiculous. There was some like tattooed eyeball or something that was ridiculous for a paladin healing, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, for sure.
So magic is not yet 85, which is depressing, but he is 4 bars away and expected to hit 85 this evening. and that will be, thank God.
See, that's because the kind of dedication that will take you into the night to get that done before you go to bed.
Yeah, that is definitely along the inverse scale of bars left to need to play.
Yeah.
And then I guess once I do that, gotta start running the high level normal dungeons and heroics. Lots of excitement there. I've done a bunch of guild runs, actually. I don't think I've done one pug, but I think that's due to the fact that a DPS wait for a pug is about a half an hour or so. Is that right?
That's harsh.
That's what I have heard people in guild saying. And so I've done a few guild runs, one of which I did with you, Kern, and it was you on your hunter. And oh, yes, it's coming up. We were running, what is the one where you have the two beams you gotta interrupt?
Blackrock Caverns.
Blackrock, that is the Blackrock Caverns. And some trinket drops out of Blackrock Caverns. Like, man, I don't know if that's better than mine, and it gives some amount of agility. And I inspect you, and you're using Schnatz's Medallion of Command, which at first look, 234 agility, chance to grant 918 mastery for 20 seconds. I mean, it looks awesome. There's no denying that.
It definitely does look awesome.
And until you read that your melee attacks have a chance to grant 918 mastery, that's a big fail on your part.
Okay. So, in my defense, that's a quest reward. And I was definitely questing at something like 5 in the morning and saw agility and mastery. I thought, this is awesome. And in my defense, like, it had more agility than my other trinket, which I don't believe had an interesting proc at all. So it was technically an upgrade, but I did look like a dingbat, basically, for equipping that. So pointing that out.
No,
to
no problem. In fact, I guess we'll move on to my second hilarious guild-related run, which was actually including Dayton, you, Darista, and Fog, where I had just hit 70, or 83, rather, zoned out, trained up Ring of Frost, and jumped back in, and we were doing the Stone Core, and I pop it on the first one, and everyone's like, what the hell is that? I have no idea. And I'm keeping quiet, laughing to myself. And people are like, is it a good thing? And things keep getting frozen inside of it. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool, and it has a fun sound. And so I do that on a few more packs and question you guys, and you're like, I don't know what it is. And you think it's, what paladin spell do you think it was?
I thought it was Holy Radiance, because it's got the exact same sound as Holy Radiance. And I haven't seen Holy Radiance. Like, at that point, I was on my hunter, so I hadn't leveled Madron up to, like, 83, which is when we get it. And so I thought that they had added, like, a really neat visual effect to it. Apparently not.
You were wrong.
And, yeah, at this point, I had to pop my Holy Radiance because I was tanking at the time, and I popped my Holy Radiance and ran around Kern in a circle to see if she might clue in that it wasn't actually Holy Radiance that was going off.
Yeah, I think actually Fog then was like, oh no, that's not Holy Radiance. Then he had it and he popped it as well. And they're like, all right. And so, Dayton, you whispered me, or I whispered you, because I thought you had said you knew what it was, but you didn't, so I kind of blew it by telling you what it was. And then Fog got clued in later. And we're just teasing Kern. Go ahead.
But the most hilarious part was Darista.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I pop Ring of Frost, and we're teasing Kern and Dara about it, and she's like, oh, no, I know what that is. And I was like, oh, really? And she says, yeah. Or we say it's Blizzard. And she says, oh yeah, it's Blizzard. Like, I've used Blizzard forever. I know it's Blizzard. And so we're like, oh yeah, okay, it's Blizzard. We thought she knew. I mean, we thought she was playing, you know, Kern as well. But it turns out we were playing Dar and Kern at that point, because she was not sadly correct.
Yeah, so would you kindly explain to the class what the hell Ring of Frost is?
Well, what it looks like, I'll start with, because it's awesome, is it creates a rather large outer ring with another runed kind of ring around that, and a frosty effect in the middle. And then after 3 seconds, it sets, and anything that runs in that circle for 10 seconds is frozen solid. And I'm not sure if it can happen more than once. I think I had it happen more than once today, but more testing is warranted. I haven't really had a lot of... It's a serious PvP spell. It is really cool. How about you, Dayton? How was your week?
My week, like the first couple of days of launch were pretty long. Unlike a lot of our you know, people in Apotheosis. I'm on the Atlantic time zone. I'm probably the latest raiding member of our guild. So when Cataclysm launched, it was actually 4 a.m. my time. And I had a lot of work to do, so I actually, you know, went to work for the morning, but, you know, then took Tuesday afternoon and Wednesday off to come home and level.
Oh, nice.
Logged in, you know, went straight to Veshir. Basically, I went to Veshir first because I want to, you know, start boosting my Earthen Ring rep to get the Helm enchant. So I started doing Veshir, and Veshir was an absolute zoo. The first couple of quests you do there where it's just run around and collect four of these things and four of these things when there's 50 people running around was absolute madness. But eventually I kind of wore, you know, got away from the pack and kept going at a steady pace and, you know, finished Veshir, I think the day I was there, like
that
I totally
nice.
Loved the zone.
Is there a lot of phasing over there where you can like split off? Because I know, I guess there wasn't even really a ton of that over in Hyjal, but there, like, zoning was one of the things that I think we were talking about last week, where, you know, after a certain, there may be different zones, so you don't have as many people in any given zone, or I'm sorry, any, is it zone that I'm thinking? I'm thinking zoning or
phasing.
Thank you. Phasing is the word. Where people are phased.
I don't think that Veshir used a lot of phasing. Veshir itself is a huge zone. Like it's so big it actually has three sub zones to it.
Wow.
Like eventually you'll clear out one of the sub zones and then you'll pop on one of your magical seahorses and take off to the next one. But as far as phasing, there isn't. I found there wasn't a whole lot of phasing until the very end of this, like of the Veshir storyline, which I might add was totally epic. The way the whole, I mean, no spoilers, of course, but the way the storyline of Veshir wrapped up and how it led, kind of, it led you into going into Throne of the Tides to kind of finish that storyline was. Totally epic. Totally loved it.
I've not been over there yet. I'll have to try, I guess, after. Maybe I'll level the priest over there, because that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Veshir. And I mean, after finishing Veshir, I went back to do Hyjal and include all Hyjal, and it was good. But I mean, between the two starting zones, Veshir was definitely my favorite. I was kind of worried because when I finished like the last big quest of Veshir, I didn't get my quest achievement. And I look at the counter and I'm at, you know, 145 out of 160, and I'm starting to freak out. Like, well, what, did I miss something? Like, I was so thorough. But then on the forums, there was a lot of people having the same issue, that is, they were doing all the quests, but it wasn't dinging their achievement. So I figured, oh, well, it's probably just something wrong. And I moved on. And like, when I logged in the next day, I had my quest achievement. So everything was good there.
Oh, that totally, I believe that happened to me in
Deep Home.
Yeah. Where I did a certain number of them and then I was like, man, I still have 17 quests to go, and the achievement pops up, and you're like, oh,
yeah, same
surprising
thing happened
but happy.
Yeah, like they had a typo or whatever, and they didn't fix the typo, but they fixed the actual requirement for the achieve.
Yeah, and of course, Deep Home was super super pretty. Like, I loved the environment and all the colors of all the rocks and the way like some of the pillars would kind of be stable and then they explode and freeze and. Really, really like Deep Home. I finished all Deep Home. The quest chains were really, really cool, like putting the World Pillar pack together. And for those first couple of days, I really enjoyed swimming in all of the Elementium. It was everywhere, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah.
Back in those days.
Yeah, back in those days. I dinged 85 late Thursday night. I normally call it a night around 12 Eastern if I'm going to play late, but, you know, I had about, I'd say about 16%, if that number reminds me, until 85, and I decided I was going to stay up late and finish it, and I did, and I was sluggish on Friday, but it was totally worth it.
Nice.
What else have I done? Once I hit 85, I headed straight up to Twilight Highlands to try to finish blacksmithing. Oh, what a painful, painful grind blacksmithing
is.
Yeah,
that seems pretty horrifying, that along. How's engineering? That's got to be along the same lines. Although blacksmithing is probably worse.
Yeah, well, I mean, engineering, Day, one of our other officers, is, I think he did 525 engineering in, I want to say, like, a minute. Like, he logged on, and I blinked, and then he had it done. Like, I don't understand how he did it so quickly.
Well, it's because he's a gnome, so he gets, like, a plus 15 racial to it, and so he can technically cap out at 540, and that's what'll net him the achievement of working all night and day, or whatever it is. He can get all of the recipes at 525 as it stands right now.
Awesome. Now, I think like one of the hardest things about blacksmithing, and I don't know how this compared to, tailoring or enchanting, is that eventually you hit a point where the trainers don't teach you anything more. You have to, you have to reach a certain point in Twilight Highlands to, for the NPCs to start, they'll start selling you the recipes. But, you know, I have to turn in, 20 elementium bars to get one recipe to get me, five skill ups, and then go all the way back and do it again. So it was a really brutal, brutal grind. But other than that, I haven't had a lot of time to step foot in any heroics yet. I've just been like super busy in RL, and I think one of my favorite spots so far is definitely Vortex Pinnacle. I love the art, and I love the layout, and that boss, the one that actually dropped your Drake, Alteris, is actually a really cool gimmick with the wind. And I remember when we were doing that five man, and I was asking like Madge, well, what's the deal about the wind? And he's like, well, you have to point the dragon with the wind. And I was like, do you want me to blow the wind down his throat, or do you want me to blow the wind up his butt? And he's like, well, up his butt. And that just made it, super clear.
Pretty easy to tell which way you want him to go with that.
Exactly. I mean, none of this like up wind, down wind. Just tell me to point it so the wind goes up his butt. You don't need to sugarcoat it for me. But that's been my week, and right now I'm just trying to finish off Twilight Highlands and replace my last couple of purples from Wrath to start being able to do heroics.
Well, that's exciting, and I guess we'll move on along to Hotfix, as there's been a few I don't know if about exciting, but a few interesting changes that have happened recently. I think more recently BOP JC designs. What's that about?
Well, when I was leveling Kern, who's not a jewel crafter, I'm a skinner leather worker on that tune, I came across the design for, I believe it was the Steady Jasper, which is Resilience and Stam. And I'm like, oh, sweet, I can give this to my brother, whose JC we're power leveling. And I realized it was Bob. And I'm like, what? And I thought, well, okay, they've made a mistake here, because generally, if it's BOP, it means it's only lootable by that profession. Otherwise, it's generally a BOE pattern. So I held on to it. I didn't vendor it, which was my initial thought. Sure enough, a couple days later, it was no longer bound to me, and I was able to give it to my brother.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah.
That reminds me of the BOE / BOP pattern item combos they had in BC.
Oh, God, yeah.
What a pain that was.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's BOP stuff is the cloth I just started making that we thought was BOE, the dream. Is it dream cloth?
Dream cloth.
Yeah, BOP. So that's super obnoxious.
Yeah, I saw someone in trade the other day going, price check, dream cloth, because obviously there's none on the auction house. And I say, that's Bop. And he whispers to me, he's like, no. Oh, God, is it really? I'm like, look at the tooltip. He's like, oh, man.
Yeah, that was a sad wake-up surprise to him.
Let's see, what else? Respawn rates. Has anyone else noticed this? I'm, like, fighting a mob, and then, like, almost immediately after it dies, I get another one, and sometimes I'll even get, like, a third mob before, like, that whole spawn is just dead.
Wow.
It's
yeah,
insane.
I've run into it all over the place. The first time I seen it was just in one of the initial starter quest in Vash, where I had to go and loot one of the four shields off the ground or something, and I was in a spot where the little goblins that were there would spawn and I'd kill it, and then another one would come and I'd kill it, another one would come and I would kill it. And I'm thinking, well, I understand that in the starter zones they want to up the respawn rate, and that's totally fine, but to the point where I can't get away is a little ridiculous.
Excessive.
Yeah, and definitely. Forget about drinking or anything. I mean, if you take like 3 seconds to drink, bam, the mob's on top of you again.
Yeah, but it's good at especially in those immediate starter zones where you're, I think we had just millions of rock elementals somewhere in Hyjal, and that's good. But then I actually had that happening today in level 84, 85 territory. It's like, that's completely unnecessary. You're not going to have, past the first couple of days, you're not going to have that many people there that are trying to do that quest at the same time.
Exactly. So I think it's some sort of respawning bug. It did happen on beta, and I know I did report it, but clearly either that's intended, which I don't think it is, or they just haven't gotten around fixing it yet.
Yeah, I'm hoping for the latter, that, you know, in the next week or so, as that huge surge of new players are all going through the starting zones, that, you know, they might turn the dial down on some of those respawns, because it is kind of a nuisance. I mean, it's great that you never have to wait for mobs, but it sucks that you can't get away to drink or to move on to the next one.
Absolutely.
And then another interesting fix that may or may not be coming was enchanting mats. Who did we hear about this from?
We heard about this from Num Numinal, who's the guy actually who does the intro for the podcast.
Champ status.
Exactly. He was telling us that like back in Burning Crusade and Wrath, when you would DE something, you would generally get more dust than you would get essences. But it seems, and Dara can attest to this, because she's who we power leveled enchanting for, that the dust was really rare, but the essences were really common. But Num told us, I'm not sure where he heard it from, but he said that that's probably going to be changing, and you'll be getting a lot more dust and a lot less essence. So that should be really interesting.
Yeah, the price on dust was absolutely absurd the last time I looked, and I think this will be an interesting change. I'm not really sure what enchants were requiring in terms of materials and dust versus essence, but unless
lots
they
of
were...
dust.
That sounds similar to the last expansion, and that had to be drastically changed because dust was both hard to get and insanely expensive because it was hard to get. The supply and demand was not evening out at all.
It was almost as bad as all the cloth on the auction house.
Yeah, that we paid like 200 gold a stack just to finish up that last day, I believe.
Easily.
Horrifying.
Another thing I've noticed is pets are acting strange. I'm not sure if it's warlock pets, not sure about DK pets, but hunter pets are completely crazy. I did most of my leveling as Beast Mastery with my bear Fozzie, and every so often he would just take off and run like 30 yards away. Then I'd be like, well, where the hell did my pet go? And then it's as if all of a sudden he realized I was looking for him. He would then turn around and come running back to me.
Huh.
And on occasion drag a mob or two with him. And it's not like he actually attacked them. I think he, like, face-pulled them. But he was on defensive. So I don't know what the deal is. I think it might have something to do with how critters are now affected by AoE and stuff. I'm not entirely sure.
You heard here first, folks. Undocumented patch change. Hunters can now play fetch.
And apparently their pets may be listening to your mind to come back. So, you know, when you need them to come back, think about it. And Blizzard has attuned their game to your brainwaves. That's also, you heard it here first.
Yes, definitely. let's see what else. Sad news. The node nerf for veins and herb spawns. So sad.
I'm glad Toga did the herbs. Thankfully, that wasn't as huge a difference, because by the end of like day two, the guild bank was literally full of herbs. That was
the guy is a total machine.
What else?
Like my first couple laps through Deep Home, I mean, you could trip into a stack of Elementium. It was ridiculous. And I wish I would have farmed more as I was leveling, because, you know, once that nerf hit, whew, the stuff was a lot harder to come by.
Yeah, I took my chamois out to Twilight Highlands and went farming there, and it was amazing. And I haven't been out there since, because I kind of want to remember the good old days.
The good old days are gone, never to
Sad.
Be seen again.
And now for slash raid. We did not raid this week.
So it's less slash raid, I guess.
It's more like...
Slack raid.
There you go. Perfect. Excellent. Just a bit of guild news. We finally found a rogue buddy for Takari. So welcome to One Man Short, a gnome rogue. Thanks for joining. Much appreciated. What else here? This is as good a place as any to talk about a couple of guild achievements that we've gotten. We not only got the critter kill squad achievement, which at some point will unlock for us the armadillo pet, but we also got critter get in. I just got to say, Toga, what the hell? 70,000. He killed like 70,000 critters by himself after building up on a pretty nice head start by Piggly and Yuffie. But good lord, man, 70,000 innocent critters.
That is a completely an unimaginable number of like mobs. Like just trying to consider the number of things he killed is just crazy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Toga is to critters as Deathwing is to Azeroth.
There you go. That's a great comparison. Let's see. Other guild achievements, we got Making History, which is the archaeology one. We also got a bunch of heroics done in a guild group. So that's Deadmine, Stone Core, Halls of Origination, Blackrock Caverns, and Vortex Pinnacle is the most recent one. And then today I was reading various blogs, and I came across at Falling Leaves and Wings, Baruthiel's blog. I came across a method to get the broiled dragon feast quickly and easily. Basically, you buy the recipe for Starfire Espresso, you buy a bunch of cocoa beans and a bunch of fresh water, and then you just cook it over a fire or what have you. And it's really helpful if you have a chef's hat. So we did end up getting the Broiled Dragon Feast reward, or we'll actually have access to it when somebody in the guild hits honored with the guild.
That's a whole other bag of terribleness.
I still think that the GM should be exalted by default.
Yeah, you're not excused. Anyway.
So, yeah, props to Veru for talking about that, because I tested it out with about 1,000, maybe more. But yeah, like 1,400 batches of Starfire Espresso. I'm sure my brother's going to flip when he sees the guild bank.
Filled with espresso, huh?
He'd have one all the way.
It's going to kill you.
And now it's time for the guild tab, which is where we like to talk to our guests a little bit about themselves and such. So, Dayden, how about you let us know a little bit about your tune's history?
Well, Dayden wasn't actually my first tune. I've been playing WoW since day one of vanilla. I raided in vanilla on a hunter. I raided all the way through Molten Core, Blackwing, AQ40, and about halfway into Naxx before BC came out. When BC launched, I continued on the hunter and I leveled him all the way to 70. But you know, I was in my third year of university at the time, and I was just really busy with school and kind of fell behind the raiding scene with my current guild. And I eventually kind of took a break from the whole raiding thing, decided that I didn't really have the time to commit to it. So in my downtime, I rolled a pally, and thus Dayden was born. I leveled him all the way up to 70, and I remember I was at work one day, and quote unquote working, and I was reading the pally forums, and I came across a post by somebody who later found out was one of the moderators of the main Tankadin forums. And he was showing me like all these videos about like him tanking bosses, and I'm like, wow, that looks kind of fun. So I decided to spec Prots and go for that, and instantly fell in love with the whole idea of tanking. I went Prot, and I stayed Prot like all through BC. I kind of piddled around in some, casual guilds here and there, and But then eventually decided that like tanking was like the thing for me. Like I got such a thrill out of tanking and kind of being the shoulders that a lot of raids, you know, rely on. I've been in so many runs in a non-tanking role and just, you know, totally facepalming at a tank who just does not know what he's doing. And not to take credit away from the rest of the raid. Of course, healers got to heal and DPS got to kill. But tanking is definitely, you know, what I love to do. For Wrath, you know, in Apotheosis, we had a lot of tanks, but no healers. So I kind of bit the bullet and decided to try Holy for a while. It was okay.
it's just Holy. I mean,
it's just Holy. Kern does a good job, but definitely not for me. Tanking is definitely what I'm built to do. In early Wrath, when Apoth kind of split up, I had actually switched over to my shaman, and I raided on her for the majority of Wrath, both as elemental and in the end enhancement. I kind of hopped around a couple of guilds throughout Wrath. I did the whole strict 10-man scene for a while, and it was really competitive, and I really enjoyed it. But eventually, it kind of hit a point where, you know, and I think Kern has touched us on different times in her blog that, progression is one thing, but I've really missed the people of Apotheosis. I missed the people that I raided with in BC and had such a good time with in BC. I made the trip back. And also in doing so, I decided to go back to tanking because tanking, I find, is the one thing that I do very well. As a DPS class, I did okay, but tanking is what I really, really excelled at. And I've been tanking in, you know, here and there so far in Kata, and I'm loving it. I loved the changes to the whole Holy Power mechanic. Totally digging it. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, January when we step foot in some 25-mans and go from there.
Yeah, 25-mans are going to be really exciting. I can't even wait for reads in general. But what would you say your favorite memory is in World of Warcraft?
I think there's probably a couple. To me, like, one of my favorite memories is not so much one thing in particular, but it's the thrill of that first kill. I know in vanilla, like, for me, my biggest thrill was both getting Twin Imps and C'Thun down for the first time. You know, that surge of adrenaline when you're at, you know, 2% and everybody's, you know, trying to keep themselves together to try, you know, inch down that 2%. In BC, it was definitely the first time we killed Vash.
Hell yeah.
You know, oh, after so many wipes and so much time we spent on trying to kill her, and when we finally got that first kill, it was so rewarding. And I remember, you know, that last stretch where I'm dragging her all around the platform, watching out for goo and trying to, you know, just trying to keep a path going for our DPS to follow. And it was so hectic, but you know, that adrenaline gets pumping and your hands are shaking, your focus is totally on what you're doing. It was just such a huge, huge payoff. Wrath, I found, didn't really have a lot of those moments. I found that, you know, some of the kills we had, you know, right from beginning to end, like all that, the first kills I experienced, I found I didn't really have that thrill that I did, you know, those first really good kills we had with Apotheosis. So, I think my last favorite memory was our favorite game of Ken, Dade, and Tankit, which, just as a quick rundown, was I think we were in Tidewalker Trash one night, and yeah, all those Murlocs running at you, and we're, you know, setting up sheeps and CCs and everything, and people were being sloppy and kept killing the sheeps or kept hitting the sheeps. So at this point, I just said screw it, and I would just tank them all. And then everyone was like, "Can you do it? Can Dayton tank it?" And the whole mindset kind of stuck. And I remember that, like, I think this was not too long after I even joined Apotheosis, because you guys were kind of in the middle of Serpent Shrine when I first joined, and I think like at that moment, that's when I really kind of first felt my real sense of belonging. You know, I kind of found my little thing and with my little group, and it was all really, 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 really rewarding.
Yeah, that's apotheosis when we were forming. I mean, in all of that tier of content was just so much fun. I remember, especially when we were doing Tidewalker Trash, where we had not, I wouldn't say that you took, what is it, antagonizing spot at that point because he was our holy paladin, but then, our tankadin rather. And you filled his boots and more, so always. I was really excited to have another great, great paladin tank.
Yeah, and it also meant that I didn't have to do any kind of tanking, which was so humorous. I mean, I was doing the ads on Hydros and the ads on Tidewalker for a couple weeks. It was painful.
I guess this may actually relate to the next question of why you enjoyed Apotheosis.
Well, I mean, I came across, you know, I was just browsing the recruitment forums one day, and I just, you know, I saw a post looking for a prop pally, and this was kind of when I was in that, you know, that learning how to tank and learning how to be really, really good at it. And I figured, well, this is kind of, you know, my big chance to really go for it. So, there wasn't really anything in particular about Apotheosis that really like popped out at me. It was just more like the need was there and something that I wanted to do, so I apped and went from there. But once, you know, after I joined and, you know, after the first couple of the raids, you know, I was, you know, definitely convinced that I'd made a great choice. You know, the people that I raid with, you know, it means a lot to enjoy the people that you raid with. I mean, I know there's so many people out there that raid just to raid. Like, they don't log on outside of raids. They don't really hang out, you know, when they're not raiding. And Apotheosis is, like, the complete opposite. I mean, we are, you know, we are a social guild, but we also take raiding very seriously. And it's good. It's great to have that, you know, that environment and that, you know, and that kind of place to raid. So yeah, that's basically why, it's not so much why I joined, but that's why I stayed.
Excellent, excellent answer. I think that it's one of the reasons why, well, I know it's one of the reasons I sort of put out the feelers about reforming Apotheosis, is because I was in guilds that were basically just to raid, where people would only log on for raids, and then they'd like log off and log on to their alts, which were in their sort of friendly social guilds. And I'm like, no, we can have it all, and we can have fun, and we can do this again, and this will be awesome. And I'm not regretting it. And I'm really quite enjoying what we're doing so far.
Oh yeah. You could tell where we're going to be, just given our end of expansion raiding and all that good stuff.
Exactly. All right, so Dayton, what else do you like to do in game besides raid?
Really, it's kind of like a mix of everything, except PvPing. I've never been a PvPer, and I doubt I ever will. I don't know why. I guess it's just something that doesn't really, you know, float my boat, or my boot, as my certain dwarf priest friend would say that I sound like. I don't know why. I know I've kind of gotten a little bit addicted to just random achievements. I know that in the last couple of weeks of Wrath, I spent a lot of time just actually going back to some BC content to finish up some achievements that I just never really got around to doing. Like, I went through and I soloed about, I don't know, 80% of all the heroic five-mans in BC just to, like, finish the achievements off. I went and I finished, there were a couple of rep grinds that I went and finished. Like, I pretty much grinded my Dragon Maw rep all the way to get my Nether Drake. It's my current mount that I'm, you know, riding high on. But yeah, like, just a lot of random stuff, you know. I love doing just five-man content, like, you know, even, you know, in the end of Wrath, I mean, I will always hop on and do a five-man just to power through it and get her done. And I like just seeing kind of how fast we can get through it, or, you know, how quickly we can push it. But yeah, like, I think pretty much everything except PvPing I like doing, you know, outside of raiding.
Very cool, and I can definitely I'm with you there on the whole PvP thing for sure.
You'll come around. Somebody will come
Some
around.
people just do not have a lust for it, and I am one of those people.
Oh, sad pandas.
All right, and now for your quirky sort of question, which is based
Oh boy.
on you. The Protection Paladin has undergone a lot of changes from vanilla. In Burning Crusade, spell power weapons were all the rage, with Prod Pallies being the AoE tanks. In Wrath, 969 was the rotation of choice, and with the built-in Ardent Defender, lots of people claimed that Pally tanks were the face-rolling class. But obviously, throughout it all, you've really maintained your interest in tanking as a paladin. Did you ever think about tanking as another class at any point in time?
I have like one of my alts is actually it was a druid that I leveled all the way to 80. I leveled him as a feral kitty, but I did, you know, the odd five man here and there as a bear. And I mean, mind you, this was back when you could spam swipe, and it was that was a total face roll. But I think that I think at this point, I don't think that I could tank as another class, not for any reason that I think that certain classes are better or certain classes have different skills that I would rather make use of. I think it just comes down to the fact that Dayton, Dayton's my character. Dayton is my, he's my main tune. Tanking as another tune would just feel kind of strange. I think the only way, I mean, I remember thinking about this once, like, what if I came up with some RP foolishness that, Dayton didn't survive the fight with the Lich King and he came back as a Death Knight? Like, could I get away with that?
Wow.
And then I thought, well, no, that'd be kind of stupid and also expensive because I would have to pay for a name change. And me and name changes, oh, just it leaves a really bad taste in my mouth because like the spelling, I mean, the spelling of my toon's name as I see it is Dayden. And when I transferred off of Elder Thallus, and I mean, at the time I wasn't, I didn't think that an opportunity would arise that I would come back, so I never really thought of putting a placeholder there. So I just left. And when I decided to come back, sure enough, there is currently to this day, there is a tune on Elder Thallus named Dayden, Den. It is a level 11 Tauren Druid
Oh,
and has not done a single thing since about the 10th of March of 2010. So for about 9 months now, that tune like has been sitting there holding my name, and
that
it
just
kind of hits you
sucks.
right there. But when I transferred over, I mean, I changed it to Dyn, and I gotten used to it. But Den Dayton is my tune, and he's always been a pally, and I'll always tank as a pally just because that's kind of that's the extension of myself in WoW.
Very cool. Excellent answer.
And with that, we'll move into our general chat. And our general chat today is our Cataclysm first impressions. Go over a lot of the general zone, instance, guild things, just everything new that is going to be more to come in depth as we go along. But this is just the first looking at that we'll have on this podcast. So I guess we could start it with one of the two starting zones. What do you feel like, Kern?
Well, I've done Hyjal in completion.
I have as well, but why not? That sounds good. So Hyjal is a starting zone. It's 82.
I think it took me like through 82.
Wow, that's quite a bit.
Probably, yeah.
And it has, so you start up in the northeast corner. What instances are in Hyjal?
None.
None. That's so
Yeah.
sad. So there's no discovering any instances while you're over there. And has a bunch of different quest lines, some including some old people you'll enjoy seeing again.
Oh,
And
for sure.
some pretty epic. Were there many cutscenes in Hyjal?
Not that I can recall. Maybe one or two.
Yeah, I think there was one or two kind of towards the end of the Hyjal story arc, but there really wasn't a lot kind of that were pieced in throughout the quest lines.
Yeah, so it was pretty good. I think you're right. I think that took you through 82 or so, and I went over there because the Hyjal rep I needed for Helm Enchant. I think by the time I was done with the zone, I was revered, so it didn't even make a difference. Do you think that's human only, or do you think that is the same for almost any race?
Well, I also did it on my human, on my pally, but I noticed that when I was done, I was 8K into revered, so I don't know if, you know, being human got me all of that 8K. I don't think it did, because, I mean, it's only a 10% boost, right? So I think most people should get to revered or very close to it if they do the entire zone.
Yeah, I completed the entire zone on Dayton, who's a dwarf, and he was revered when he was done.
Perfect.
Interesting. And yeah, so the Hyjal was a lot of fun as I went through it. The other starting zone, Vashir, I know nothing about this place besides I believe it has Throne of Tides, correct?
Yeah, yeah. And it's underwater.
Oh, there's that too. Yeah, I remember swimming straight down through the water for about 5 minutes and going AFK for part of that.
It's the only way to travel.
Yeah, so what interesting goes on down there?
Well, Vashir, it starts out where, you know, you launch from Stormwind, where you have to wait for the boat that takes approximately 6 hours to cool. show up to the dock.
Yes.
You hop on the boat and you sail off into the sea towards some island where you need to, you know, help the people there. And due to, you know, along the trip, some events occur that I won't spoil for anyone who hasn't yet done Vashir. But you're taken underground and the Earthen Ring is there and they're there to kind of get you started. But you know, the first little bit you are actually, you know, swimming underwater, in a bubble, I think it is, to you, so that you don't drown. But eventually, oh yeah, right. The bubble is like the spell that the Earthen Ring casts on you so that you can breathe underwater. And, along with this spell, you get, this increased run speed when you're on the ocean floor, and it's the funniest looking thing because it kind of looks like you're skipping because you're running so fast. It's really entertaining.
That seems hilarious.
Yeah.
It's and, sort of like when you're on the moon, you know, like
exactly.
You're
it's like you're moonwalking on the surface of the on the surface of the ocean.
Huh.
And eventually you're given a seahorse mount to kind of better get around. It's like a mount you can only use within Vashir.
Is it still permanent? Do you have it with you all the time, even though you can't use it?
Yes, I mean it's basically like a mount spell that you learn and you have it always, but it's only usable within Vashir, the zone. Like you can't go underwater elsewhere and use it. It's only usable within that zone.
That seems tough.
Yeah, it kind of sucks because it'd be great to be out, you know, in Twilight Highlands or something and trying to zip across the water and, oh, should I pop up my seahorse and zip across? But no, it's it's not that awesome. But, you know, Vashir had some really cool cool quest chains. You're saving some of the crew from the ship. You're going in and rescuing some of the bigger sea creatures underneath that kind of live on the bottom of the ocean, and you run in through a lot of Naga territory, and there's a lot of lore with the Naga and what happened to them and whatnot. And it's, I mean, of course I'm not going to spoil anything, but, there's some really great quest chains in Vashir that I really, really enjoyed. Between Hyjal and Vashir, it's like, for me personally, Vashir is the easy winner. I totally love the zone.
If both my 80s to go to 85 weren't casters, I would most certainly head over there. But just like not starting the helm rep would just seems like an unfortunate plan, especially if it's a starting zone.
Yeah, I mean, and really, with the amount of rep you earn by doing the Hyjal zone, you're not really missing out a lot if you want to do Vashir first. Or, I mean, if you'd want to do both, like I did. I mean, I started Vashir thinking that I'd be getting a lot more rep with Earth and Ring. But in reality, you don't earn as much Earth and Ring rep as you do with the Hyjal, the Guardians of Hyjal, when you're doing their zone. Like, you know, you clear all the quests in Hyjal and you're revered with Guardians. But, yeah, you know, you clear Vashir and I think I'm like just, you know, I'm almost, you know, just a little past honored, I think. Wow. There's just, yeah.
That's a pretty, substantial difference.
Yeah, it was a huge difference, and I was kind of disappointed when I finished Vashir, and all of a sudden I'm revered. I'm like, well, geez, where was all this rep when I, you know, went to Vashir first? So Vashir is going to require a lot more grinding to get it. And I think it's a lot of it is the fact that a lot of the quest chains in Vashir, you're not doing quests given by the Earthen Ring. Like, there's still a lot of quests you're doing by just the humans. And so I think this probably accounts for it, like, lore-wise, why you're not doing that. Whereas in Hyjal, like, every quest you do is related to, you know, that faction.
Gotcha. That's true. And also, you do get some Earthen Ring rep down in Deep Home, because you're also working with them there for at least a portion of the quest. So, I mean, I can see why they would have sort of split it up a little bit, but that is certainly frustrating to not, you know, end the zone and have, like, a really substantial lead on your rep.
Especially if you're trying to knock out all the quests in the one zone, you feel like, oh, I've done a lot of work here, enough that I've earned this achievement. And I get almost nothing from it. Thanks, that's great.
Here's some greens, awesome.
Hooray. I guess that started to Deep Home. Sounds like a good place to go next. At least that's where I went next.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can go there at 81, actually. So if you don't even really want to finish off Hyjal or Vashir, you can just go straight to Deep Home and take the Maelstrom down there and do all kinds of awesome quests. I've done the zone entirely on Kern, and Madron is working her way through it. And it's kind of varied. You've got a lot of stuff going on. That's where you encounter the Therizane people.
That's your shoulder enchant, correct?
Exactly. It'll give you the shoulder enchant at Honored and a better one at Exalted. So they are the Hodir of Cataclysm.
But they do have...
They have a tabard.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Which is a pretty big difference. So as soon as you can get it, you just grab it and move on. At least that's what I did. And I'll worry about the rep at a later time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can always be grinding the rep as you do your higher level dungeons and your heroics. So I really enjoyed Deep Home, just because you have different models, different scenes, different sites. And for Kern, I had a great time skinning damn near everything I saw, which was great.
Yeah, anything that you can't skin down there is pretty much mineable, like the corpse is mineable. As well, there's a lot of earth and rock dudes down there,
and the gyro worms,
I think they're called.
Yeah, they're probably hands down my favorite new Wrath model that I've encountered so far.
Yeah, just to take a brief aside on that one. In fact, I didn't do Deep Home before I did the Stone Core, so I got into the Stone Core and saw that model, and I was really in awe. I was like, wow, that is a sweet, sweet model. And actually, it was a little disappointing to get then down into Deep Hole and be like, oh, they're everywhere, but they're still cool.
It's funny, because when I first saw the model on beta, I was like, what the hell is this? Is this even finished? It's sort of like, I wanted to like poke at it and go, are you done? Like, is this it? But that's yeah, I definitely enjoyed Deep Home quite a bit, and I'm determined to stick it out on Madrona, even though she's 84 and a chunk. Like, I could go easily to Uldum and start my rep with the Ramkahen, but I really want to finish out Deep Home on the Pally.
Yeah, Deep Home was a good time, and like Dayton said earlier, the repairing the pillar is cool, and just it's a fun zone, a lot of colors, exploring around, again, not with too much detail, but the ships, the Alliance, oh my goodness, I can't remember the name.
The airship.
Yeah. And the Horde one and all that good stuff. It's a lot of cool lore down there.
Yeah, I think the only negative thing I would have to say about Deep Home is the absolute lack of flight points. You know, Deep Home is a huge zone, and you port into the Temple of Earth in the dead center, but if you want to get anywhere else, you have to fly there yourself. And which is odd, because, you know, in all of the other new zones, there are flight points quite frequently. They're all over the place. But in Deep Home, there's none at all. And I mean, I can understand that from, you know, a lore point of view, because, you know, underground, you know, we're going into uncharted territory. I mean, you know, the people that live underground, it's all the Therizane. I mean, even the Earthen Ring is new to the zone. I mean, they don't belong there. They're just there to help.
They don't like us very much.
Yeah, you know, the Therizane does not like invaders, you know, just, you know, bumping around their crib. So yeah, there are no flight points, which, you know, it sucks from a, you know, convenience standpoint, but from a lore standpoint, I totally understand why. Yeah, like Matt said, Deep Home is very pretty. There's a lot of really cool, you know, just environments in there, and all the stalactites and stalagmites shooting up and down. And it is a very big zone. I think it's probably the biggest of them all. I haven't really been a lot in Ulthum yet, so I can't really compare, but I do think that Deep Home is probably the biggest. I mean, well, actually, I suppose Vashir would be the biggest, because it's split into three. But Deep Home is a gigantic place, and man, can a brother get a flight point?
Speaking of flight points, though, actually, yeah. I noticed this on beta, but Ramkahen, for example, which is the major city in Ulthum, isn't connected to Gadgetzan by flight, or any place, actually, by flight, only within the Ulthum zone. And I don't know if that's a technical limitation, like that requires you to have...
a flight point you don't know about?
No, but like, I wonder if it's a technical limitation in that you can only fly within Ulthum so that people can't, you know, sneak into Ulthum if they don't have the expansion or something. Like, I don't even know if that area is accessible to people who don't have the expansion. But it seems to me like if we can fly up to, what's that place? You know, outside of Zul'aman, which came, you know, that was new territory in Burning Crusade. If we can fly there, why can't we fly to Ramkahen?
Well, I mean, like in BC, you could fly up into there?
Yeah, like there was a flight point outside Zul'aman, right? And you could fly from like Ironforge or wherever, Eastern Plaguelands, up to there. But you can't fly, like there's no flight point that I've found in the old content that is connected to anywhere in Ulthum.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, that is kind of weird, because in all of the other zones, I mean, you can fly into them from, you know, connected flight points from vanilla content. I mean, you can fly to, you know, you can fly to Twilight Highlands from, you know, Loch Maddon. I mean, you can just, it's like, whoop, and you're there. But with Ulthum, yeah, it is kind of weird that you can't fly there from Gadgetzan. I know, like, for me, like, I went in there the first time, for me to get there, I had to, like, when you get that breadcrumb quest, you have to, like, there's no portal, there's no magical boat you get on.
You just gotta run.
You have to get there. And I'm thinking, well, great, I mean, I'm in Stormwind, so I have to, like, fly to Ironforge and go to Theramore, like, and go all that way. But, I mean, me, I thought I was kind of clever. I still had my Medallion of Calibur, which transports me to BT. So I ported myself to BT, flew to Shat, went to the bar, talked to the chick that would port me to Caverns of Time, and then I flew from there. And I thought I was pretty clever, right? So like I zip in and I do that, you know, the initial cutscene to get you into Uldum, and I did like the one or two quests to kind of get you started, but then I left, I explored, and then I zoned back. But now I guess I haven't done enough quests there to unlock the permaportal to get back.
Is so now, there one? Because yes. Oh, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there will be eventually. I mean, in Twilight Highlands, I was kind of faced with the same spot. Like, I did there, I went and did a couple of quests. But when I came back to Stormwind, the portal wasn't there. But as we're in Twilight Highlands, I mean, as we're doing the quest, you unlock the portal. So then it's always there permanently. So I'm assuming that something along that line happens in Uldum to get you back. Because right now, when I go back, I have to, you know, go the long way just to get back there.
Well, next time, talk to me. I'll put you over in
Theramore.
In Theramore.
Done.
Because that's the way that I did it. And so I was like, oh, other continent? Sick. Port, done deal. And, well, there's still a bunch of the flying. And I guess I've done... It's weird because I've done almost every quest over in Uldum, which is the third place I went. And I do not have that portal.
Really? Because I think it was once I got into Ramkahen and did a couple quests there that the portal opened up for me.
Does it say that you got a portal?
No.
Okay. It just happens.
No, it's like you then have to like go back to Stormwind or whatever and check out the little island there.
I guess since, again, I'm spoiled, it just has never occurred to me. I just port to and from Stormwind and then I have a hearth set over in Uldum, and then I don't worry about it. I've sort of thought about it. Like I've flown over there a couple times and been like, well, I guess it's not there. Teleport, whatever, forget. So I also did not finish what I felt like may have been the initial quest lines in to go off with Harrison Jones, which consumes a very major part of Uldum. So again, no big spoilers, but he's there and he's here to hang out, and have a good time.
Harrison Jones is like the best character ever. I adore him. I love him so much. I was a huge fan of the Indiana Jones movies as a kid, and it was just really so much fun to go sort of exploring with Harrison Jones.
I'm not gonna. Ahoy.
Yeah, I know, and I'm not gonna spoil anything for anyone. But if you have not done the Harrison Jones quest lines in Uldum, go do them. Probably one of the funniest parts for me on the beta was when I was going through this, and at one point I meet up with Harrison Jones, and he's like, I literally have nothing to give you, come back in 2 weeks. What? So I was very disappointed.
They were still working on it.
Yeah, exactly, they were still actually writing the quests and everything, but I was really disappointed because I'm like, no, I want more Harrison Jones.
There's, I was to say, there's references, if from what I've seen, I think there's references from every movie, like literally every single one, right?
I'm not sure about the most recent one.
Yep.
Even the crappy fourth one?
Really?
Yep, 100%. In fact, ugh, almost the first quest you do for him
really
references that one. Yep. I can't say it on here, but talk to me after the podcast, and I will tell you about it, because it's most certainly there.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, so that zone has been just really cool to look at, and all the Indiana Jones references, and just the what the zone looks like. It's one of my favorite zones that I've quested in altogether. And just a metric ass ton of cutscenes. I feel bad with people I'm chatting with, because at any given moment I could possibly be in a cutscene, and that's true for like 50% of the time.
Yeah, that's very true, especially in his quests. So be aware, basically, that you may get a cutscene at any given moment.
And I think one bad side to Uldum, similar to one bad side to Deepholm, is, and Kern has moaned and groaned about this a lot in Guild Chat, in game, is the complete lack of mailboxes by these mythical cat people who don't like to send mail.
I did not. It's one of those things I totally did not even notice.
Yeah, I was really annoyed. I noticed it on beta. I've noticed a lot of things on beta. I have reported a lot of things on beta. Like, I feel like I personally squashed 100 some bugs or whatever. But like I mentioned the flight point connections, I mentioned the lack of a mailbox, and then I get to Ramkahan, like on live, and I'm like, okay, where's the damn mailbox? And I'm like, oh no, they haven't implemented one yet? Are you kidding me? Oh,
they probably won't.
No, I don't think they will at this point, like just to spite me.
Excellent. Anyway. Twilight Haylands, I can literally say nothing about. I've not been there, and I know zilch about it.
Dayden must feel at home there with all the dwarves.
Ooh. I do, yeah. I gotta say, Twilight Highlands has been a really cool zone. I'm roughly 75% or so through like quest completion. But yeah, this Twilight Highlands has had some really cool storylines. I mean, the basic concept of the zone is the Dragomaw are fighting the Wildhammers, and there's a lot of, you know, orc on dwarf conflict going on, and you're there kind of chipping in and helping out where you can, and there's a lot of like flying over the zones. You're seeing battles all over the place, and it's got some really cool like mini spots, and the quests have been really great, and there are some cutscenes that are really really impressive that I really got a kick out of, but yeah, Twilight Highlands, it's definitely up there. It's a great spot.
Interesting. I've been arguing with myself whether or not to head over and just kind of experience it. What's the level? The level of
84-85. Yeah, I think it's like 84-85. Anybody that was there before that, I think was just there to mine, because I mean it's a good spot for Elementium. But the questing there, I mean, I wouldn't go there pre 84, just because you know you face a lot of level 85 mobs. And at level 85, like I think mobs have like 80k health or something. It's, you know, they're no pushover. Yeah,
they hit hard.
And they hit hard big time.
I remember doing it on beta in like basically 82 greens because nothing was itemized beyond that. And so I'm in like my really crappy 82 green eye level like ret gear. And I'm having to stop and heal myself and eat and drink like after every pull. God help me if I got a second mob. And it seems like it's still the same sort of incoming damage if you haven't like upgraded too much. But at least now if you've got like 83, 84 greens, you're actually able to take them down without them, you know, killing you.
Yeah. It's pretty. It's a lot easier as ret, I gotta say. You know, ret pallies are an amazing solo class. You know, I can just pop off free 20k heals here and there, and then after every mob dies, you know, I get my crusade up, and you know, for 10 seconds, I think my holy light heals for 300%, which, you know, it's doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, I mean, it crits for like 23k. I mean, that's Red Palace have it kind of easy with Word of Glory and Crusade procs. My downtime is really really low.
So all right, that sounds like a quick run over of the zones at this point. So in addition to all these fun zones, we now have instances in these zones, and we have seven? Are there seven new instances non raid?
Looks like, yeah.
And the lowest level one is Blackrock Caverns?
Yeah, Blackrock Caverns and Throne of the Tides, I think. I could be wrong on Throne of the Tides, are level 80 instances. They're not level 78 instances. Bear that in mind. Like, I don't think you can get there unless you're 80.
Well, you have to... Well, I guess an overview for all of them is that you actually have to you have to find the instance.
That is true, and some people can't find anything. Like, general chat these days in any of these zones is like, where do I find Throne of the Tides? Where do I find the Stone Core? How do I get to Vortex? It's like, guys, seriously, go Google it, go check out YouTube. There's actually a great YouTube video, which I will link on the webpage, which shows you the entrances to all of them.
Now, unlike... Wrath and BC, can you actually get into the new zones at 78, or is it strictly 80 only? I don't know if I ever actually saw that anywhere.
I think it's 80 only. I think you can probably get into the zone and then, you know, die hideously. Yeah. But I don't think you can get a quest until 80.
Okay.
Which kind of makes sense, right? Because you don't want to have two levels in this new content and then, like, end up being 83, 84 and having no quests left.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, so Blackrock Caverns is 80 to 82-ish. So Run of the Tides, I think, is 80 to 82 or 81 to 83. Personally, I hate that place. That could be my beta experience talking, but I'm really not a fan. That's obviously Throne of the Tides is in Bashir. Blackrock Caverns is in Blackrock Mountain, back in Syrian Gorge / the Burning Steps.
Has no link to any of the like quest lines in any zones at all, does it? It's just like,
actually,
there it is.
Actually, Finkel over in Hyjal, I think he teleports you there. I think that that might be the one thing I did not do. But
really? I did not do that either. I didn't even know that happened.
Yeah, I think that if you talk to him, you get ported to Blackrock Mountain. I think you discover the instance entrance.
Huh.
I could be wrong.
That saves a lot of time for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's Blackrock. It's really very, it feels very much like Blackrock Spire, like Upper Blackrock Spire in particular, I find. And it's sort of good to see sort of old friends in the sense that you're fighting, you know, sort of familiar mobs in a familiar setting. I really like Blackrock Caverns for that.
Yeah, there's, That I guess that was even the first instance when I came online and for the first time. I was like, let's go, instance now. Where the hell am I going? And then being able to just fly, now you can fly not just in general, but actually in Blackrock, where you can be mounted up in there, which is really nice. But I got super lost on the way because it's annoying to get to.
Yeah, when I did it on beta, I remember dying because we didn't have to discover the instance entrance at that point. I remember dying and then going, guys, what, guys, where do I go? And they're like, I don't know, I'm lost too.
Yeah. So, all right. So then the next, I forget if actually we did Stonecore next or Throne. I think we actually did Stonecore, but Throne is hypothetically the next one. Well, Throne and Stonecore are in equivocal starting zones. So
no,
I guess
Black
you could
Rock
really.
And Throne
are equal?
Yeah, basically. And Stone Court is like the next level up, basically.
So, Throne of Tides, I have only done once. And that was actually, that was really cool. I was a big fan of that.
Yeah, I'm still, like, the last boss, I'm still kind of like, what the hell? Like, giant squid thing, is it? Like, I, to this day, I have not actually seen this last boss.
Really?
Really, because my graphics are, as you know, crappy.
Oh.
And so all I know is that there's something outside of the room that we're in that we have to target and, you know, lay waste to.
That's so sad for you. That's such a fun, cool thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a few, I think, is that the, I don't know if that has the most bosses. Sadly, I've only done about only four of these instances just due to level restriction, or if I'm running with guild people, then I'm either on the higher end and I'm still running Stonecore or Throne of Tides, or people are now running heroics. So I can't really get a great group, and I'm not going to pug just because of the DPS situation, aka 30-minute queue times.
Well, the instance with the most bosses is hands down Halls of Origination. I think that there are 7 in there.
Wow, I have not been there. What's that like?
Large. I did bits and pieces of it on beta one day, and I was healing, so it was kind of challenging. It seemed to be really neat. A couple of neat mechanics, but I don't really know too much about it because I haven't done it on live yet.
Interesting. I have not done it either. Have you done it, Dayton?
No. The only 5-mans that I've done thus far are, I've done Blackrock Caverns, and I've done Throne of the Tides, Vortex Pinnacle, Stonecore, and Grim Batol. So the Ulbum 5-mans, I haven't done either of them yet.
Well, Grim Batol, I've not done Grim Batol either, even though I could queue for that, and it sounds interesting.
Oh my god, I've been waiting for that instance since I first discovered Grimbatul and the red dragons in the east end of the wetlands at like, I don't know, level 30 or something on Kern. So that's like, I don't know, 2005. Something like that. I was really excited for that, and I've done it on beta, and it was actually a really fun instance to do. There's a lot of trash, but most of it is basically you get to ride a dragon around, which is fun. So you don't really have to deal with a lot of the trash that is actually there. The boss fights, from what I can remember, are fun, and when not bugged, should not instantly kill your tank.
Yeah, Grimbatul is, I mean, I think we're kind of at a point where I think we might skip a couple instances, but we can always come back and talk about it in a minute.
Yeah.
But Grimbatul is definitely one that I've enjoyed the couple times that I've done it. Yeah, like Kern said, there is a lot of trash, but that is circumvented when you hit this, like, early on in the instance where, you know, you grab a Drake and you go on this, you know, controlled bombing run around the instance, and you take a lot of the trash. While I think that that's a cool idea, at the same time, if you don't do it efficiently, it can make your run a lot more difficult, because some of the trash packs are, you know, 5, 6, 7 mobs in size, and, you know, it's definitely not ideal for just run in and AoE tank it, because a lot of those mobs are hitting you quite hard. So, you know, if you don't make a good run with the bombing, and you, because essentially the bombing run, you go around and you're throwing bombs down and you're not killing the mobs, but you're weakening them. So if you're not efficient and you don't take out the right groups, or you don't hit them enough, you're not really doing yourself much of a favor. If you're good at it, you can clear packs altogether. But if you're not, and a lot of your mobs are still up, then you're left having to CC some off, because some of those trash packs can be really difficult. But while I like the idea, I wish it was a little more forgiving. Because, you know, when you're pugging that and people are just like, I'm just going to hit whatever, you know, you're not making the most use of it. It can really make your run go a lot longer, because these little packs of trash can be really challenging.
That's true. When I did it on beta, the drakes were actually bugged and we couldn't use the drakes. So we cleared it all manually.
Wow.
Yeah, so I still haven't actually ridden on the Drake. I just know we're supposed to. But the group I was with on beta was actually really efficient. We had a hunter, a shaman, and someone else who did a form of CC. I don't remember who. It wasn't a mage, though. So we had traps going off. We had bind elemental going off. Oh, no, you know what? It was just the shaman and the hunter. Hex and bind elemental and a trap. And wow. It was working beautifully. So I strongly recommend CC if you guys aren't all that efficient at the dragons.
That is certainly something that I'm looking forward to. Even though vehicles are not a huge fan of yourself, I'm always interested to find out if they can do it effectively in an instance setting. You know, after the dreaded...
Malagos.
Yeah, Malagos and...
Slain Leviathan. Oh, wait. What
five? Well, I mean... The big difference is that the dragons in Grimbatul, they fly in a controlled path. So all you're doing is just doing the bombing itself. So that makes things a lot easier.
That's true. The Oculus. That's it.
Oh, God. I am so glad not to ever have to run that place ever again.
Amen.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people are happy about that one. I guess there's only a few more. The Stone Corp, which is located physically in, what is it?
Deep Home.
In Deep Home. And that's actually just straight above the middle area where you zone in. Which is funny, because there's a quest to speak to the person right inside, and I had someone asking in general, where do you do this quest? Where do you hand it in? I don't understand. Like, well, it says to go into the Stone Corp, so that's probably your best bet. Come on, champ. Get on top of that. And yeah, that's where I saw the model for that worm first. And Stonecore is a lot of fun, and you get a return of your old friend Milhouse Manistike, which is pretty funny. And he's from, what was it, the Arcatraz, I believe?
Yep.
I ran Arc like twice. I hated that place. So I don't know.
I think he's on your side back then, but now he's a little more upset at you and does some funny stuff. Gnomes as enemies in this game are always pretty hilarious. See Arcatraz and, or I'm sorry, see the Stone Core and TOC, I guess.
Oh yeah, Wilfred Fizzlebang.
Exactly.
Something I wanted to mention about the Stone Core, because I see this mistake being made constantly, and I understand it's a new instance, but if you see someone casting something, you can interrupt it a lot of the times. So you can interrupt the transformation into the big Earth Revenant thing, and you can also interrupt the cast that the Earth Revenant does, which is the nasty AoE. I've heard a lot of people saying, I don't know how to deal with this. My group just, like, everyone died and they blamed me. Am I a bad healer? I'm like, no, no. If you're seeing that, it means that your group is sucking and it's not your fault.
So, yeah, that's a lot of AoE damage. I definitely remember the first couple times that was, I wouldn't say a problem. I think, again, those were guild runs, and so the healers that we generally have in the guild are pretty solid, so they didn't have any problems healing it, but I was noticing a lot of damage being taken very quickly.
Yeah, so it's important to like either CC that mob. I think it might be called the Earth Shaper or the Earth Warden or something like that, or something earthy. And if he does transform, then you can, you know, interrupt that, which is key.
Yeah. One of the other last two instances to speak about, the Vortex Pinnacle, which I've actually done quite a few times, and I don't know if that's just random or what the hell it is, but I've done... That was where we had that fail druid and a lot of exciting things. The first time I stepped in there, I was amazed. Even the instance entrance was kind of cool, and then you get into the instance and it looks awesome.
Definitely beautiful. It's one of the best looking zones I've ever been in. I can't think of another instance that is so gorgeous.
It's very impressive the way that they put that together. And I was kind of hoping. I think people said that the other Oldham instances aren't quite as cool as that, and I was kind of disappointed because I figured they'd all be that amazing.
Yeah, like Halls of Origination is sort of like Ulduar-esque, and Lost City of the Tolvir it is not. I don't even know how to describe Lost City. It's sort of like Ramkahen-esque, like the opening quests in Oldham. Have you sort of captured, right? So it's sort of like in that whole area, I believe it is. And it's kind of an interesting place to be, kind of outdoors, but sort of in a sort of town setting. I kind of like it. I don't know. It's sort of just a sort of typical instance that is out of doors, so, but... Can you mount? Yes.
That's a true test of out of doors. Oh,
yes.
Good. Those are always nice.
But you can't fly, I don't think. But you can definitely mount. And some of the bosses there are pretty neat. The last boss there is really cool, actually. But it sort of leaves me cold. It's not spectacular in the way that Vortex Pinnacle is. It's not immense the way Halls of Origination is. It's not cool and dragon-esque the way Grim Batol is. It's not a bad instance.
Pinnacle had a lot of really interesting pulls and so forth and mechanics, like Dayton, like when you said about the dragon and the wind.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun to figure out or just kind of see the first time it happens. And I guess when tanking, you do have the faster cast. But, oh no, you don't have faster cast, you have the slower cast. But just being able to like let loose on that boss is a lot of fun. And then what are the names of those stars that you get?
I don't even know. There's some kind of damn stars. And I've never seen so many people's health drop so quickly, basically, in my life.
Yeah, that was amazing the first time we ran up there and wiped... maybe literally five times on these stars, because again, this druid was saying AoE them. That's the way my guild did it. And I was like, all right, I guess we could try that. And that just failed horribly. That was the dumbest suggestion ever.
Pro tip, single target down the stars. You don't all need to be on the same target. Just pick a star, kill it, move on to the next, kill it. Don't AoE. AoEing is a bad call. Use any defensive cooldowns you have just to help out your poor healer who's probably having a heart attack.
Yeah, those things hit for between, what is it, 2 and 2.5 or a little more than that each, and they're hitting everybody like every second.
Constantly. And when you're going down the ramp with the Zephyr, you'll see what I mean, do not go beyond the ramp because you'll pull the second pack of stars. You want to stop right at the bottom of the ramp. Just don't move, wait for everyone to group up, and then when you're ready, you can go.
And also featured in this instance are these big pyramid lightning things where, again, I think the first time we actually did pull that group correctly, because we saw that and we're like, well, we should probably keep the mobs away from it. We don't really know what it is. And as
yeah,
it turns
that
out,
can't be a good thing.
Yeah, it grounds all spells pointed at anybody inside the triangle, which actually plays into the last boss of the instance. But it's impossible to pull casters out of there unless you're bashing or kicking, and it's just a mess, and I've officially given this a name.
Oh, God.
Yes, absolutely, oh, God. They're officially dubbed Pyramid Packs, because that's it. I've decided. And it's got alliteration, which means it can't go wrong.
Okay, being that my blog's name is Kern's Corner, I'm a fan of alliteration. And as I recall, I was the one who insisted that you get the Merrymaker title, so that you could be Merrymaker Magic Marine, which is awesome.
That is quite the title. I think it's very manly as well. Manly Merrymaker Magic Marine. If I could add that, I would.
But I still think that Pyramid Packs leave something to be desired. I'm sorry.
I disagree.
All right, it's time for our shout-outs. My shout-out, my first one, is to Harrison Jones. I loved you in Wrath. I love you in Kata. Oh God, more Harrison Jones, pretty please. Don't forget, he's also your archaeology trainer, if you're Alliance, that is. Also, another shout out to Toga, one of our officers, for being an absolute champ for mining and herbing for the guild while we power leveled people's professions. Everyone did a lot of mining and a lot of herbing, but Toga went above and beyond on like two different tunes. So thanks, buddy.
Yeah, he was a total house when it comes to herbs with like guild bank full of herbs for both for who did alchemy.
His
alchemy, done
what,
yeah. The first day?
Yep.
That was just scary. And then by the second day it was full of herbs for me to power level my inscription, which I guess I have a couple of shout outs. The first one is to L of L's Angling and Professions for a great inscription power leveling guide that we'll link in the show notes that pretty much with Toga's herb, what is it? I guess just
supply.
The supply and the massive amount, a plethora almost, of herbs that I was able to power level it in close to 2 days, I guess, with a fair amount of gold. Just volatiles are so scary. And also, if you do go do that guide, make sure you note that the Rune Scroll of Fortitude 2, as of this podcast, does not give points. And I learned that one the hard way, in addition to it saying it on the thing. I just didn't read it.
Yeah, so read the whole thing first.
Yes, read all of the instructions before you go about doing it. And my second one is a shout-out to all the level 85s that are currently running heroics and dungeons. Congratulations, and I hope to be among you soon.
How about you, Dayden?
My shout-out this week goes to the Maw of Madness in Twilight Highlands. Why are you so angry? I don't understand why. What do you have to be angry about? You know, you seem to be quite, you know, swirly and tentacly, but why are you so angry looking? I think any other shout outs I would have to go to all my fellow node stealers in Twilight Highlands. If you're dumb enough to sit there by a node, I'm going to steal it from you. So if I steal it from you, don't whispery, call me a bad name, tell me I'm mean. You were there, I just got there quicker.
Nice.
Fair enough. All right, and the tip of the week this week is to always read the entire tooltip before rolling on loot or selecting a quest reward, even at 5 a.m. Especially at 5 a.m. We'd love to hear your tips of the week. If you have any you'd like to share or any feedback you might have, you can email us at blessingoffrost@apotheosis-now.com. So let us know what you thought. You can also follow Apotheosis and myself on Twitter. Follow at ApotheosisET and at Kernmoog. And please don't forget to leave us comments and rate us up on iTunes.
So thank you, Dayton, for chatting with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a hoot.
Of course, always a good time to talk to you. And I guess that brings us to the end of our fourth episode. I'm Magic.
I'm Kern.
And I'm Dayton.
Until next time, stay frosty.
Blessing of Frost is a not-for-profit World of Warcraft podcast by Kern and Magic, copyright 2010. Certain audio portions of this podcast belong entirely to Blizzard Entertainment, and no copyright infringement is intended. Thanks to our Gildy Numenal for his voice for our new intro, and thanks to you for listening.